Sunday with Miriam on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by SuperValu Insurance, looking out for you and yours with our new life and mortgage protection insurance.
Tweet at Miriam O'Call.
Well, award-winning writer, journalist and Irish Independent columnist Martina Devon has a new novel out, and it's about Charlotte Bronte, author of Jane Eyre and sister to fellow novelists Emily and Anne. It's told from the perspective of Mary Bell, the Irish woman who met Charlotte when she came here on her honeymoon and who went on to marry Charlotte's widower, Arthur Nichols. It's called Charlotte, a Novel, and it's published by the Lilliput Press. And Martina's here this morning. Lovely to see you, Martina.
Good morning.
I was reading all the reviews this morning. They're all so positive. Tell me, first of all, about your fascination with Charlotte Bronte. Did it begin, like so many of us, I suppose, with Jane Eyre?
Absolutely, Jane Eyre. I loved it as a kid. The character of Jane, this feisty governess who makes the case that you don't have to be rich, you don't have to be beautiful, you don't have to be powerful and connected to be entitled to love. You know, she says, I have full as much heart and soul as you, to her employer, Mr. Rochester. And she just has this extraordinary sense of self-worth. And I remember the line from it. You'll see it on tote bags and mugs now. But I am no bird and no net ensnares me. I'm a free human being with an independent mind. And this is, it's a feminist rallying cry. And it was published in 1847 at a time when women had virtually no rights. They certainly didn't have the vote. If they married, they became an adjunct to their husband's property and possessions. So it's an electrifying phrase even today. But can you imagine the impact in the first half of the 19th century?
They were so ahead of their time. Now, listen, the Bronte family home on the edge of the moors. Have you been there?
I've been several times. I clearly had it in the back of my mind, though I didn't recognise it at the time, that it would be a great subject for a novel. And I went maybe 10 years ago with my sister. She lives in England and we do little literary trips together. We've been to the Lady of Llangollen's house. I'm pronouncing that dreadfully. If there are any Welsh listeners, please don't be offended. We went to Howrah and had a wander around, and it's this perfect little gem of a museum because it's as the Brontes lived in it, and it's full of their possessions. And this part of Yorkshire is magnificent. The moors are just behind the house. It's on the edge of the moors. But you can also see partly why they had all this Gothic inspiration for their novels, because the house is also on the edge of the graveyard and the headstones jostle against the wall. They must have seen it every time they looked out the window.
Now, what I didn't know, and I should have known, is the whole Irish part of the Bronte family, which I know you're fascinated in. Explain the connection.
I think that's the reason really why I got to grips with writing a novel, because I do need an Irish angle for my own interest during research and to keep going with several years of working on a novel. I always knew that Patrick Bronte was Irish, though slightly puzzled by this name Bronte.
And he's the dad.
He's the father.
Yeah.
He was the vicar of Howrah. And he looks like an Irishman when you see photographs of him. He's a red-haired Irishman. And he was born Patrick Brunty. Sometimes people say it Brunty, but we know he said Brunty because he was signed into Cambridge when he went there as a young man as Patrick Brunty. And sometimes it was written as Brante, which is the County Down accent. You know, my name's Patrick Brunty. And at some stage over those subsequent years at Cambridge, he reinvented himself as Bronte in an act of distancing from Ireland, but also perhaps a little bit of social climbing. And I wouldn't be quick to criticise him for it, because he made a huge journey for a young man born in 1777 from quite impoverished circumstances. I mean, he was put to work as a blacksmith's apprentice. He was an apprentice weaver. Then he became a kind of a hedge schoolmaster. And did get to Cambridge with help and through his own hard work and cleverness, but he went to Cambridge as a servant in exchange for lectures and grants and things.
And where was he born?
He was born in County Down. The Bronte connections are near Rathfryland, kind of the Banbridge area, Drumballyroney, all around there.
Now, this is also, for context, it's Ireland just after the famine. So what would Charlotte, what would she have known about Ireland?
So her take on Ireland was influenced by a kind of anti-Irishness in England at that time. The Irish people she would have met would have been largely walking skeletons fleeing from the famine. If we remember that the worst year of the famine was Black 47. And the poor English ports were crowded by Irish emigrants. And there was a lot of negativity about them in the Irish press, and the English press. And I think this was to do with, it's easier to be critical of a people you have misruled than to accept some responsibility for the famine and the state of Ireland.
And how did she end up coming to Ireland? Explain her marriage and the connection with Mary Bell.
Yeah, so Arthur Bell Nicholls was Patrick Bronte's curate, and he had been in Haworth for a good number of years before he proposed to her. He had been curate for 8 years. But what I find fascinating, his middle name is Bell, and her nom de plume was Currer Bell. He had been there a year when she was first published as Currer Bell, her collection with her two sisters of poetry. And I think she was conscious of Arthur before she really acknowledged it to herself. Anyway, the years passed, and in 1853 he proposed marriage to her. She was very surprised and turned him down. Her father was hysterical at the thought of her marrying him. Everyone else was dead at that stage. I guess he was afraid of losing his last remaining child. But also, by this stage, she was a famous novelist, and he felt that his daughter should do better than a penniless curate. But Arthur was persistent and genuine in his attachment to Charlotte, and he kept proposing. And I suppose she thought to herself, what are my options? At the time he proposed, she was 37, which was old enough at that time. Mm. There wasn't a queue of people wanting to marry her. I'm sure that didn't bother her so much. But it's more a case of what was going to happen to her when her father died. He was in his late 70s. This parsonage to which she was passionately attached went with the church. So as soon as her father was gone, her home was gone. You know, another vicar would be put into Haworth Parsonage. She was also very lonely after the death of her siblings. You know, she had an awful 8-month period where she buried Branwell, followed by Emily, followed by Anne. And Arthur offered life and love and hope. And so she did accept his proposal round about her 38th birthday in 1854. She wasn't in love with him at that time. She very clearly says in letters to friends, I'm very inexpectant, I'm subdued, this will be for the best. I admire his qualities and I hope that affection will turn to love. Now, Arthur was born in Antrim, grew up in Banagher in County Offaly. He and his brother were semi-adopted, fostered. You know, in families, yeah. Even in my father's time, sure, you have none and we have lots, have some of ours. Or the hope that you could give them a better life. And that's what happened. Arthur's uncle ran the Royal Free School at Banagher, and he got a really good education, went to Trinity College. So became a Church of England minister, and always a huge attachment to Ireland. All his holidays were spent in Ireland. So when Charlotte agreed to marry him, he brought her to Ireland for a month-long honeymoon to meet his family. And they came across from Holyhead on the steam package. She arrived in Dunleary, Kingstown as it was then, got the train into Westland Row or Pearse, and there to meet them was Mary Bell, Arthur's cousin that he'd grown up with in the Bell family in Banagher, and her brother and his brother, this little welcoming committee. And Little did they know that the second Mrs. Arthur Nicholls was meeting the first one, and she spent part of their honeymoon with them. They went to Trinity College, they went to the Phoenix Park, he showed her all around Dublin. Then he brought her down to Banagher. They spent a week there with his relatives in Cuba Court. And it's at that point in the letters that you see Charlotte start to reassess Arthur, because it's a gentleman's country seat. And she's very impressed with this great mansion that he grew up in. Of course, it didn't belong to him and it didn't belong to the Bells either. It was, the you know, they rented it and the school was behind it. But nevertheless, she's starting to think he's a gentleman, not a penniless curate. She sees him in his own environment, and definitely you start to see her fall in love with him. They go all around Ireland. They go to a place that's in your heart, Miriam, to Kerry. They go to Tarbert. They go to Tralee. They go to Killarney. They do the lakes. They go to Cork. They're in Limerick, and she's very, and of course I should say Kilkee and Clare, because that's where she sees the Atlantic Ocean, and she's just absolutely mesmerised by it.
But you know, like, the tragedy is, you mentioned earlier about how all her siblings died. When I was reading this book, you realise how young people died. So she was pregnant, but she died in pregnancy.
Yes, and that wasn't that wasn't uncommon. You know, childbirth was a very dangerous undertaking for women. Yes, she died in March 1855, 9 months after her marriage. And can I just pause and say here that it was a very happy period in her life, that marriage. You know, she was looking for love and she found it in Arthur Nicholls. We often think of the Brontes as this tragic trio, you know, these sisters who were dogged by tragedy. But Charlotte did know this great period of happiness. And yes, she became pregnant, and it was that the very severe morning sickness, hyperemesis gravidarum. And we know that from letters she wrote. She couldn't keep any food down. She first was speaking about describing her symptoms, which are clearly severe morning sickness, at the end of January, and she's dead at the end of March.
Now, he then, her husband, obviously he was distraught, but he married then Mary Bell. And you use Mary Bell, his second wife, to tell this story, don't you? Now, I know it's called Charlotte, a novel. It's a great read. But how much is fact and how much is fiction?
Oh, well, it's a blend. It's not a biography. And, you know, it's called Charlotte, a novel, to signal that things are made up. For example, I do a shocking thing, Miriam, an utterly shocking thing. I send her up to County Down to meet the Brontes. And the reason I do that...
Because she didn't actually go. Yeah.
It bothered me because I thought, why didn't she go and meet her father's people? And you could speculate on all sorts of reasons. For example, her uncle William was a United Irishman out in 1798. Fought in the Battle of Ballinahinch, and then he went on the run. Her grandparents, Hugh Brunty and Alice McClory, were a mixed marriage, Catholic and Protestant. So these kind of factors, I think Patrick Bronte himself had anxieties around and passed that on to his children. There was also this sense that the Irish were rackety and feckless. I mean, Charlotte, in all these letters she sends home about her honeymoon, anytime she wants to say, to praise the Irish, says things like, well, the Bells, I mean, everything was English good taste and good manners. And so she keeps saying, and when she was describing Mary Bell, the future, you know, her successor, she'll say things like, a very pretty ladylike woman with English good manners. She wrote, I'd heard a lot about Irish negligence, and I didn't see too much of it, though she saw a bit of it in Kilkee, she said.
It's nice. Michael Nolan texted and said, just to let you know, we're currently having a Bronte Festival in Kilkee on the 170th anniversary of her honeymoon in June 1854.
Yes, isn't that lovely? Yeah. And she was electrified by the Atlantic Ocean at Kilkee, and they stayed a little longer than they intended there because it was so dramatic. I really believe had she lived longer, she would have written an Irish novel, because she used her own life. Jane Eyre, it's very hard not to read that and think there's an awful lot of Charlotte Bronte there. I'll give you an example. Four words which have echoed down the decades. Reader, I married him. Where Jane speaks directly to the reader. You know, the fourth wall is collapsed. Look at the phraseology. I married him. You know, Jane made a choice to marry this man. She wasn't chosen, she chose. And Charlotte Bronte made a very deliberate choice to marry Arthur Bell Nichols. Her father was against it and she brought him around.
Now, you always say, Martine, you're really aware of the way that Charlotte, you know, she risks being exploited by people. People talk about the tragedy. So how do you write about her and not do that yourself?
Oh, I plunder her story shamelessly. It's a it's an act of cannibalism. I'm doing what other people did. The only difference is I'm making a claim for the Irish hinterland in the Bronte's novels, and they're regarded as jewels in the crown of English literature. And all I'm saying, in a novel form, not a biography or an academic work, all I'm saying is the Irish element was very important. Jane Eyre and the other Bronte novels are full of Gothic hardware, and they inherited this storytelling tradition from Patrick Bronte, who was a great oral storyteller, and her grandfather Hugh. Everybody in County Down says there was nobody like Hugh Bronte for telling stories.
Now, look, before I let you go, I have to ask you about the dedication in the book in memory of Niall Devlin of Oma, beloved. That's your brother, Martina.
That's my brother, Niall.
Do you mind me asking you about
it? No, I'm very glad you mentioned it, because it was a great opportunity for me to dedicate this novel to Niall. It was all I could do. He died in January. He's one of my brothers. I'm one of seven. I have five brothers. I still say I have five brothers, even though I only have four. But I still have five in my head. Niall just dropped dead of a massive heart attack. There was no warning. He hadn't been ill. And it was an enormous shock to us. We miss him dreadfully. He was cremated and we scattered his ashes in Mullaghmore in County Sligo on what would be his birthday on the 7th of July. His wife Fiona waded out into the water at the pier there and scattered them, and we threw out flowers from the garden. Actually, flowers that my father had grown from a slip that my grandfather had grown in County Limerick, and we brought them. And why I'm telling you this is it was an act of love and a very positive thing, but Niall left us a gift. We were urged after his death to get ourselves checked for heart disease, that there was a family preponderance towards it. And we all did. And I myself, I'm now on statins for high cholesterol, even though you'd look at me and think, you know, I'm not overweight. And I nearly cycled here to RTÉ, but I thought I'd be too hot and sticky when I arrived. I mean, I go about on the bike and you know, we're all quite, most of us are quite healthy, you know, runners. A lot of the Devlin men are runners. And my brother Cahill in particular has every reason to be grateful to Niall, because 12 days after Niall died, he's a school caretaker, and he had these awful chest pains, and he kept saying, no, I'm grand, no, I'm grand, because that's how Cahill is. And one of the teachers in the school said, get yourself checked out. He went straight to the primary care centre, was brought straight to Derry and had stents put in his heart. Wow. This is Niall's gift to us, and I would urge listeners, take your health seriously, please.
Well, look, Martina Devlin, it's a wonderful novel, Charlotte, a novel by you, Martina. It's published by the Lilliput Press, and it's lovely it's dedicated to you, Niall. I'm so sorry about your brother.